Right, Lord, we'll call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect the time is now 1:03 PM, Friday, April 29th, 2022. We have a quorum with Representatives McKay, Representative Cronk, myself, Representative Putkadup, Representative Hannon, and Representative Shragi. I'm sure the others will be joining us as we just broke from the floor and everybody was rushing to grab lunch. So I'd like to say thank you to our recording secretary, Robin, LIO moderator, Talia. Remind folks, please silence their cell phones and set them up on a pad so we don't hear it vibrate through the table. On today's agenda, we've got Senate Bill 204, Hunting Permit Tag Auctions Raffles by the Honorable Senator Rivak. And then later in the meeting, we'll take up House Bill 349, which is the Hearing Established Drilling Units and Spacing by Representative Rauscher. I'd like to welcome Representative Rauscher, Representative Gillum, Representative Hopkins. I'm sure Representative Fields will be joining us. Time is now 1:03 PM. For the record.
For the record.
This is our first hearing on Senate Bill 204, and we have Senator Rivak and his staff, Emma Torkelson, here with us in the audience to introduce the bill. If you folks can please take the hot seats at the table. Put your name on the record, begin with your introduction, and we'll go to questions after the introduction. Senator Rivak.
Thank you, Chair Puckettuck, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the House Resources Committee. For the record, Senator Josh Rivak, District M. Since its passage in 1997, the governor's auction and raffle tag program has successfully and substantially increased the funding for the wildlife conservation programs and outdoor tradition educational efforts of Alaska Department of Fish and Game and outdoor-focused organizations all around the state. In 2021, gross revenue is just over $1.2 million, and SB 204 seeks to build on this success and expand the department's ability to bring in revenue by adding one new species and increasing the maximum number of permits they can issue to be auctioned or raffled. The funds will support wildlife conservation and wildlife protection programs and education across Alaska. Additionally, with the large increase in firearms and ammunition sales and approximately $18 million in new Pittman-Robertson funds becoming available soon, ADF&G will need sufficient matching dollars to prevent these new PR funds from reverting back to the federal government. We don't want to leave that money on the table. This is not the first time this sort of expansion has taken place. In 2014, House Bill 161 made similarly sized increases to the number of harvest permits that could be issued annually and added several new species to the list. A noticeable jump in revenue resulted back then, and we anticipate increases along those same lines, with the possibility of a lot more in Pittman-Robertson federal matching funds. Modern effective wildlife management is becoming more expensive. For example, an increase in a couple of dollars to aviation fuel has a major impact on survey and inventory operations, which in turn are a key element in setting game population and harvest objectives. Without accurate objectives, for instance, the Board of Game cannot make well-informed decisions on yearly hunting seasons and bag limits. In sum, SB 204 will allow more federal revenue to be leveraged for critical sustainable wildlife education and management programs and the proactive work needed to prevent new listings under the Endangered Species Act. Senate Bill 204 directly supports sustainable wildlife populations, outdoor traditions, hunters, and outdoor recreation users. Thank you again, Mr. Co-Chairs. I, along with Eddie Grasser, the Department of Fish and Game Wildlife Conservation Division, are happy to take questions or run through the sectional. Ms. Emma Torkelson, if you like.
Thank you, Senator Rivak, for the introduction. Any questions before we go through the sectional analysis with Ms. Torkelson? And then, as mentioned by the Senator, we've got ADF&G Eddie Grasser online to provide some invited testimony as far as the implications to the department. Seeing no questions, Ms. Torkelson, sectional analysis, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the House Resources Committee. Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Rivak. Section 1 of Senate Bill 204 amends AS 1605-343A, which is the partnership program, where the department donates the harvest permits, and the organization may raffle or auction them and keep 100% of the proceeds. It adds a Fognac and Raspberry Island herds to the type of elk harvest permits that can be donated by the department to be auctioned or raffled, and reduces the total number of harvest permits that can be issued from 4 to 2 upon recommendations of department biologists. Additionally, Section 1 adds the word wildlife before conservation, where it's listed in that list to clarify that nonprofits who qualify to receive these donated harvest permits must be established to promote education and outdoor traditions and wildlife conservation and wildlife protection programs in partnership with the department. Section 2 amends 16 AS 1605343C, which is the program where the department issues harvest permits to qualified organizations who then auction and raffle them and split the revenue 70-30 with the department. ADF&G gets 70%. Firstly, it removes the differing tag limits for the individual species and just allows up to 4 harvest permits to be issued for all of the listed species. The department retains the ability to issue fewer than that based on their biologist recommendations. It adds 4 McNeil River State Game Sanctuary bear viewing permits and emperor goose to the list of permits that can be auctioned or raffled. Because we're adding emperor goose, we remove all instances of the word big game in front of the harvest permit. So now it will just be harvest permits throughout the bill so that it's consistent. Revisor changes are made also in this section. It moves a portion of language in Section 2 down to Section 4 and creates new 2 subsections, which I can explain later. Section 3 standardizes the eligibility requirements for nonprofits to be able to auction or raffle, as in that word wildlife again, throughout, so it's all the same. Section 4 amends AS 1605343 by adding the new subsections, reinserts the language from Section 2 to create a new subsection F that requires that all revenue earned from an auction or raffle be paid to the Department of Fish and Game, except an amount not to exceed 30%, which the qualified organization putting on the raffle or auction can retain for the administrative costs of holding the auction or raffle and approved projects and educational programs. Secondly, it reinserts the language also removed in Section 2 to create a subsection G, which explicitly limits the use of funds by the organizations to the approved programs listed in F, and prohibiting the use for any candidate, use of the funds for any candidate for political office, organizations supporting or opposing ballot measures, or expenses incurred from hiring lobbyists. Finally, Section 5 sets an immediate effective date. And that concludes the sectional analysis.
Thank you, Ms. Torkelson. Any questions from committee members before we go to ADF&G, Representative Hopkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this might be a question for ADF&G, so maybe I'm jumping the line, but is there a list of organizations that have received these donations from the Department of Permits? And with the changes to saying only wildlife conservation, which of those might not be allowable anymore?
Mr. Chairman, I would defer to, for the record, Senator Rivak, District M. I'd defer to Mr. Grasser.
Thank you for that, Senator. Mr. Grasser, if you could just please address the question in your comments for invited testimony when we get to that point. Any other questions from committee members? Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you. While we're addressing to the chair, while we're talking to the to Mr. Grasser, I was wondering, excuse me, approximately $18 million in new Pittman-Robertson grant money coming our way. There was a statement that was previously made, and I was just wondering how are those grants that were already approved or to come our way, and how is that coming our way?
Senator Rivak, if you'd like.
Yeah, so thank you. That's a wonderful question. I'll address a bit of it and then turn it over to Mr. Grasser to maybe expound a little bit. But Pittman Robertson are matching federal funds that where when we spend money, they match. And so what we have in the TAG auction program is that these nonprofits can auction these tags off, and then the Department of Fish and Game gets 70% of those, and those funds are matched using Pittman-Robertson funds. So it'll be potentially millions of dollars. Last year we passed a measure where these raffle tickets could be sold out of state. which drastically increased the revenues to the state. And so essentially we're taking voluntary dollars to fund our fishing game while we're doing a good job promoting healthy hunting practices and wildlife conservation. So that's the goal behind it. Those Pittman Robertson funds are there. It's an ongoing program. We're able to match quite a bit, and Mr. Grasser can directly address what the numbers are.
Thank you, Senator.
Yes, sir.
And before we go over to Mr. Grasser, I just have a clarification question. And as far as your intent as the bill sponsor, in the first section, we've got some herds being added and total number of harvest permits being changed. And I'd just like to clarify, is that two harvest permits per each island herd, or is it two permits in aggregate of all the herds?
To the chair, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Rebeck, it is two total. So the department will choose one of or up to two permits for either Raspberry Island, Fog Neck, or Edelin Island herds.
Okay, appreciate that clarification. Mm-hmm. Any other questions before we go to ADF and G? Seeing Representative Hannon.
Thank you, and I apologize because I was still perusing while the chairman asked the question. So it's two per herd per year, or they choose one herd per year for two harvest permits for auction?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, two total, and they can make a choice of one of the three, or the department will choose one of the three. They could issue one permit for one herd and another for another herd, or two from the same.
Okay, so they don't have to both be from the same herd. It would be two.
A la carte.
A la carte.
Yeah.
Okay, that was.
Since we're talking about food anyway. Yeah. Thank you. Follow-up, Representative.
I have a question on a separate issue, but I'm not sure if it's sponsor or ADF and G, so I'll just go. I've got a number of questions about Emperor Goose addition. And I understand the language change, but I'm not sure if I should save those questions for ADF and G, or if you want to have me pepper you with those.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, that would probably be best suited for the department, as they were the ones who recommended adding Emperor Goose.
But. All right, with that, we'll turn it over to Mr. Grass with ADF and G, if you could please provide your invited testimony. And there were a few questions that were asked beforehand, if you can try to address them, and we'll look to follow-up questions to clarify after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eddie Grasser. I'm the director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation for the Department of Fish and Game. We're in support of this legislation. And maybe a little background here. I was actually worked on the original piece of legislation with Senator Tom Bundy back in the 1990s. And again, I worked with Representative Gaddis from Wasilla on the revisions we made in 2014. A little bit of history here on how we got to this particular bill that Senator Rebeck was so kind as to champion. 2 years ago, when COVID hit, we were all worried about budget cuts and how to sustain our agencies. And in my agency or my division, we are having a discussion about where we could make the cuts. And I said, well, why don't we try to figure out a way where we can find more revenue? And so we started discussing this with other people, including Senator Rebeck. And last year, as Senator Rebeck put in his testimony, we grossed $1.2 million. And feel strongly that with these additions that we're making with the bill that Senator Rebeck introduced, we can probably raise somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 million a year for matching purposes with PR dollars. I'll try to answer the questions. The list of organizations, we have a list of about 40 organizations that we send out a call for proposals for, and I can get the give to our legislative liaison, Rachel Pankey, and get that to the committee members, Mr. Chairman. In most cases, only about, I think about 15 to 16 of the organizations on the list have ever applied for a permit. as for the $18 million, I got another bombshell to drop on you. We're going to get an additional $18 million this year that we have to find match for, but we're really working hard because it looks like the Recovering America's Wildlife Act is going to pass Congress this year. If it does, that'll be an additional $32 million on top of the $18 million, on top of the other $30 million we regularly get from PR. So we're going to have a lot of cash to match. Some of that we can do with in-kind work, but some of it's going to take some pretty fairly creative thinking to come up with the match money if we don't want to revert it back to the federal government. As far as the Emperor Goose addition to the list, we have been in conversations with Duck Unlimited and other Delta Waterfowl and other waterfowl-related organizations and bird dog organizations, and we're probably not going to offer any emperor goose permits in the near term because the population's not necessarily in trouble, but it's low. And we've always retained the authority to either issue a permit or not issue a permit based on our biological surveys. But if the emperor goose population comes back up, I've been told by folks in Ducks Unlimited that they could probably get $100,000 for that permit. With that, again, we support the bill. Appreciate the committee's hearing the bill, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm available for further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Grasser. In the efforts of creativity, maybe we should entertain a seagull permit. Kidding. To follow up, Representative Hopkins, on your questioning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Grasser. The list is in my packet. I just hadn't flipped far enough, so I appreciate the bill sponsor supplying that to us. Looking through the names of the organizations that have applied for or received the donations, I see a few that are out of state, like the SFW Utah, WSF National.
Representative Hopkins. Mr. Price, you just joined us online for the next bill, I'm sure, but can you please mute your phone line? We're getting feedback. I think we solved it there, Mr. Price. Thank you. Go ahead, Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it fairly standard to give out, Mr. Grasser, is it fairly standard to give out these donations of tags to and hunting permits to out-of-state entities?
Actually, if you read the current statute, out-of-state entity can apply for the permits, but they have to do it through a registered nonprofit within the state of Alaska that's incorporated in the state of Alaska.
And follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Thank you. Does that mean that the nonprofit entity in Alaska gets the funding, or does SFW Utah get that funding even though they have an SFW chapter in Alaska?
No, through the chair, Representative Hopkins, the Alaska chapter gets it.
Interesting. Thank you.
And then after Representative Hopkins, I believe we had Representative Rauscher that asked about the Pittman-Robertson Fund details. Did you have a follow-up, Representative Rauscher?
I just want to know what percentage is going to be just directed to here, since we're talking about the funding available. And I just wonder what percentage it would be regarding this, any idea regarding this legislation.
Can you speak into the mic, so Representative?
Okay, sorry.
So Mr. Grasser can.
Through the chair. I was just wondering when there was mention of the Pittman-Robertson funding, $18 million. I was just wondering what would the percentage of that or what the dollar amount might be concerning this legislation here.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, $18 million, we can receive that if we can come up with $6 million in match, which we've already figured out for this year.
Does that help, Representative Rauscher?
My statement it was stated before, so I just thought I'd ask a question. All right, it's fine.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Next, we have Representative Hannon, who was asking about the emperor geese. If you want to have follow-up questioning for that.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Mr. Grasser, I want to understand more about emperor goose and its potential addition, and I guess I'll start with I'll give you a whole series and you can choose the order. One, it's my understanding it's a migratory species, and the bill is referenced that we potentially could gift the state licensure for a raffle recipient. So would they still require a waterfall stamp, and would we be gifting that? I also want to understand my recollection is the demand for emperor goose in Alaska. It is one of the species that a lot of subsistence hunters are allowed to use and harvest in the spring. Would this only be a fall, or would it be a spring harvest if it were going to be done? And I guess, you know, it's great that Ducks Unlimited, I assume that must be that waterfowl hunters must have a life list like all other birders, and that's why an emperor goose could be so highly prized. But I want to understand the current consumptive use of Alaskans of emperor goose, especially if it's a spring harvestable waterfowl used in rural communities.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon. In the statute itself, it requires that whoever is lucky enough to draw a permit, whether it's a goose permit or a moose permit or whatever the case may be, they still have to follow the existing rules and regulations regarding those permitted hunts. Therefore, we cannot give a permit for the spring season because it's not part of a general draw hunt. The spring season's a special season that was set up through an amendment to the Migratory Bird Treaty Act that allows for spring harvest, and that's a customary traditional use by subsistence users.
Follow up. Yeah. So, could you tell me what our data is about the customary and traditional spring harvest use of emperor geese? Is it tens of species, dozens, or not species, tens of bags, hundreds, or thousands? And I understand that you don't intend, you think at this point that it is not a species that we are likely to offer a tag in, because it's not one that we have overabundance of, but that's partly my concern, that my understanding is that it's a species of local consumption use for customary and traditional harvests in the spring, and I want to make sure that we've protected that without risking it for generating revenue. And so I want to understand what our current take of spring harvest emperor goose are.
To the chair, Representative Hannon, I'm not sure exactly what the overall take is as far as the subsistence use is concerned. However, the permits that we're envisioning putting out there, if we reach our population objectives that allow for that to happen, would primarily be for game management unit 9, the Alaska Peninsula. And according to our data, most of the subsistence harvests on emperor geese exist in game management units 18 and 19 and I think 21. I look it up. Mostly around Bethel, so it's game management unit 18.
Right. Follow up. So, but my understanding of the flyway would be that those birds that are going to make it to Unit 18 and 19 have come across Unit 9. So, Unit 18 and 19 have done their spring special harvest take, but on the flight south, the remaining flock herd in the fall, that flock is flying south, and now I'm out in Cold Bay, and I've gotten a bear permit, and I'm going to get an emperor goose permit and take those geese there on the southbound flight of those. And so that's my concern. I am concerned. My biggest concern in this bill is the emperor goose provision and the impacts on customary and traditional use that I'm not sure why we need that now to add that species in.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, we tried to think of the species that would help us raise money if it went at some point in the future, if they're closed now, that they might become open. right now we don't have a non-resident season for geese, if I remember correctly from the Highway Council meeting. So it's, I mean, it's not going to stop us. We're not going to offer a permit for emperor goose in this year that I'm aware of. We've already told the member groups that are applying for these permits at emperor geese's, they're not on the table this year.
Thank you,
Mr. Grasso.
For the testimony, we have an obligation to conserve the wildlife to a sustainable, and if the population is low, we're not going to issue a permit. Like last year, you know, we had a hard winter in the eastern Alaska range in the Tok management area, and we not only stopped the we did offer a Tok permit and our repertoire permits available for the governor's auction tag program last year. We cut the available permits for resident Alaskans down to just 10. So we feel that the safeguards are in the bill that allow us and our biologists, especially our area biologists, to decide whether we're going to offer a permit or not. And unless we get some irresponsible biologists, which I don't think we will, that's going to always be the case. And the area biologists are pretty, they guard their species of concern in their area fairly fairly good. I mean, they're not gonna give us a permit if they don't think it's good for the overall population. It's already happened in the past, and I'm sure that our track record will remain the same.
Thank you, Mr. Grasso, Representative Hannon.
I guess I'm going to just raise one. I mean, the other ones are hunts that we have currently have raffles and permits related to, and we're tweaking the numbers. And that doesn't give me any heartburn because that's within our regulatory scheme. But with emperor geese or any migratory species, the year that we believe we could open it up, we're going to have potentially two harvests in the same year. We're going to have a customary traditional harvest in the spring. And then in the fall, someone's bought a raffle hunt, and we'll know the next spring whether we over-harvested. And I just have some long-standing concerns over our ability to biologically engage with active regulatory response when we have changes in populations and the potential that we've got two takes in the same year, and then we have a hard winter, and we won't know until the next year when there's nothing available. So we've never had this raffle ability for emperor goose. We don't have a healthy enough population to sustain one now, so it gives me some heartburn to put it into the bill to move to that until we get to the ability to go, we got enough emperor goose, all Alaskans can be hunting it, and we got extra, so let's go ahead and auction off some permits. With that said, I'll stop my line of questioning because you're all clear that that's where my concern is.
Thank you, Representative Hannon and Senator Reba.
Yes, thank you, Representative Hannon, through the chair. You know, we thought long and hard about this. We share those concerns. We certainly do not want our, as a volunteer in organizations of wildlife conservation, we take wildlife conservation very seriously across the board and sustainable yields. And certainly, we feel that the department does the same, whether it be fishing or hunting areas. I would just where we felt comfortable in this bill is that the maximum that the department could allow would be four tags, each with just one goose, is the maximum that they could allow, and they have been in the past if there are with other forms of game, if the numbers aren't there, sustainable yields are the primary focus. But having that opportunity, we need to balance the ability to fund fish and game with the game we have available. And so that's what made us comfortable enough to put in this. Our fish and game, we feel, has a pretty good track record, certainly with the management of the species. They've assured us that it won't be anytime soon, but when the time does come and the numbers exist, I think this is, this would bring in quite a bit of funds that would then be matched of course in a exponential way to fund fish and game. So we did have those concerns. I can appreciate those concerns, Rep. Hannon, and we share those, and we've thought through them in those ways. So
thank you, Senator Reback. Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I throw a goose hunt out there. So I had a question. So if you look at it, it's restricted by resident hunters by a registration permit. So we're already restricting the fall season for with a registration permit, and they have quotas already in place for emperor goose hunting. So, and for non-residents, they have to draw a permit to be able to shoot an emperor goose. So there's very great restrictions already on the emperor goose population. The spring hunt's always there. I can tell you in the interior, I think I've seen one emperor goose my entire life living out there. So they bypass a big part of the flyway, at least there. So, and part of the hunting emperor goose is in really tough accessible areas. You know, it costs a lot of money to get out there to hunt. So the pressure is not going to be there to hunt. So I don't personally see an issue with four permits to raise a bunch of money to help create more birds. So I think it's a good thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kronk. Representative Hopkins, sorry about that.
Oh, no worries, Mr. Chair. We're all in line. It works just fine. So, Mr. Grasser, thank you for coming again. I have a question about the change in the legislation adding the Wired Wildlife to the organizations that can apply for these donations. Looking at the list, Section 1, Section 3 probably also.
Yeah.
And I think just in those two sections, 1 and 3. Looking at the list of organizations, two questions. Would any of these have been excluded, to your knowledge, with this change in language? And if not, what kind of organization would be excluded with the addition of this language in the word wildlife?
It wouldn't exclude any of the ones that have been applying right now or in the immediate past. To the chair, Mr. or Representative Kaufman, I'm not sure it would restrict, but it would keep organizations that really don't spend money on wildlife conservation from applying, basically. There are conservation groups that do things other than wildlife, and like they conserve waterways or forest lands, whatever the case may be. There's conservation is a fairly broad term when it comes to sustainable yield of living or renewable resources. So this would preclude like a forestry nonprofit from applying for one of these permits because it doesn't really fit their mold.
Thank you, Mr. Grasser. Follow-up, Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All these are consumptive youth organizations. Would a non-consumptive youth organization qualify for these permits under use of the term wildlife if we're looking at promote education and outdoor traditions and wildlife conservation and wildlife protection programs? Would a non-consumptive organization also be able to participate in these donations?
Yes, if they met that criteria, that they actually were spending money on programs that support wildlife conservation or wildlife outdoor education programs.
And follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Would conserving land and environmental concerns be included in wildlife conservation? If we're looking at, if an organization is concerned about wildlife impact of opening up different lands or resource development or something like that, would they be excluded from accepting these donations or applying for these donations, rather?
Through the chair, Representative. I'd have to get back to you, I think, on that question. Unless I misunderstand it, they would have to actually engage in, if they have land and do land conservation, that's an actual project for enhancing habitat for species consumption. They would definitely qualify for one of these permits. But if they were going to use it to block development, and this is why I'm not sure about your question, of a resource like, say, a forestry project, that they would not qualify at that point.
So follow up on that.
Yep.
So if an organization wants to, and I'll use Oregon as an example, stop logging to protect the spotted owl, and that's wildlife, would they still qualify for a donation under this? Of course, Oregon. I understand it's Oregon, so I know it's a different state, but.
Through the chair, Representative, I don't believe they would qualify.
All right, thank you, Mr. Grasser.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins. And I guess going back to the Pittman-Robertson dollar amounts and the line of questioning Representative Rauscher had, can we just go through that again as far as I know you mentioned immediately there's a possibility for up to $18 million additional dollars that we need to try to match for that is on top of the existing $32 million that we match for. And in the short-term future, there's a possibility for an additional $30 million that we have to match for in the future. And that's what the effort of this bill is. Did I misstate any of that? Am I misunderstanding any of that?
Mr. Chairman, no, that's exactly right. We've been getting around $30 million a year, give or take, for the last several years in general Pittman-Robertson money. The $18 million that you mentioned and I mentioned was a result of higher gun and ammo sales this last year. And that $18 million has already been apportioned to the state of Alaska, so we need to find the match. That brings us to a total of about $50 million that's on the table right now that we need to match. And then there's a bill in Congress called the Recovering America's Wildlife Act, which raises monies for wildlife conservation of species of greatest concern. And that money comes from fines on environmental violations, say an oil company has an oil spill or something like that. But the projected apportionment for that particular bill, if it passes, we've been working on it for some time now. And to be frank, the state of Alaska has never been excited about it, but for one reason, we don't know where the heck we're going to come up with a match. But if that passes, which they're projecting they'll pass this year, that'll mean we have an additional $30 million on the table for a total of $80 million that we're going to have to find match for.
Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Grasser. Just to further clarify, it's a one-to-one match where the state needs to find a single dollar for any single dollar that's currently available under Pittman-Robertson. Not even getting into the discussion of the legislation that's pending to pass.
Mr. Chairman, that's not quite correct. If we get a dollar in license sales that we put in our fishing game fund that's available to match with Pittman-Robertson dollars, it's a 3-to-1 match. So that $1 becomes $4.
Is that what you're looking for? Okay, thank you, Mr. Grasser. I think that sufficed for the breakdown on the Pittman-Robertson and the percentages that Representative Rauscher was seeking for confirmation on. Any other questions, Representative Cronk?
Thank you, Mr. I just want to clarify, we're talking about the Emperor Goose, and I just doing a quick look at the management of that was pretty impressive. So basically, if there's a count of over 28,000 geese, they have a quota of 1,000. If it goes from 28,000 to 23,000, it's a quota of 500. Every resident person hunting can only shoot one goose. So if it dropped down to 500, there's only 500 geese available. And then if the non-resident draw, there's 25 people that draw, and they get to shoot one goose. So the management plan is actually really impressive. So I don't feel there's anything, because if it drops below 23,000, no one hunts them. There's no quota for a state hunt. So I think their management plan is a really good plan.
Thank you, Representative Cronk. And to that point, if either the Senator's office or Mr. Grasser, you can provide to the committee the management plan of the Emperor Goose as it is, so that we can have that information before us before our next meeting as we consider the new language in the legislation. With that, any other questions from committee members? Seeing or hearing none, before we go into public testimony, offer the floor to the senator to say a few words. If you'd like.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee again. I guess just for clarification, we were not interested in adding tags for the spotted owl in this particular piece of legislation. We'd be in, certainly open to having that conversation in a different.
What about seagulls?
We can talk later, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Rebeck. And we'll go into public testimony now, seeing no other questions from the committee. Public testimony on Senate Bill 204 is now open. Talia, do we have anybody online? Is it John Sturgeon? Mr. Sturgeon, looks like you might be the only online testifier. If you can please state your name for the record, provide your comments, any affiliation with organization's residency, and provide your public testimony on the matter.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to testify today. My name is John Sturgeon, S-T-U-R-G-E-O-N, and today I'm representing Safari Club of Alaska. The Alaska chapter of Safari Club International strongly supports the proposed changes to the governor's tag program, the Senate Bill 204. These changes will greatly benefit Alaska outdoor conservation groups like SCI Alaska, providing an economic boost to Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Division of Wildlife Conservation, as well as local business and communities. It's important to note that this legislation does not require the department to issue these permits if there is wildlife conservation concern. This year is an example. Safari Club raffled off the Chugach sheep tag, a guided hunt included. Of the raffle tickets, 63% were sold to out-of-state residents. This includes outside hunters' revenue being brought into the state, which is a good thing for us. The winner of the raffle, however, was an Alaska resident. The single raffle netted just around $420,000 of our net, of which roughly $300,000 goes to Alaska Department of Fish and Game for wildlife management, and $125,000 goes to the Safari Club for our conservation programs. Alaska Department of Fish and Game, as we talked about earlier, can leverage this money against Pitt and Robinson funds. So out of that one raffle, Alaska Department of Fish and Game got $1.7 million for their management programs, and our conservation group got roughly $300,000. We support this bill, and thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Sturgeon, for your concise comments. Talia, nobody else online? Thank you. And I just want to clarify, if there's anybody in the room willing to testify, sir, if you could please come approach the table, put your name on the record, any affiliation, residency, and provide your public testimony on the matter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Thor Stacy, and I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. I'm representing the hunting guides here today, who most everyone's in the field. It's bear season, so I'm speaking for them and on their behalf. The guides are proud of their contribution to wildlife management here in the state. Currently, non-resident hunting licenses and tags account for about 83% of the Division of Wildlife's budget. Within that structure, we supported the governor's tag. We support this bill here today. We think it's a good reform. The guides are proud of their participation in the governor's tag program. APHA, the group I represent, partners and auctions off these tags, and many of the guides donate the guided services as part of the package. So there's the tag that has value, and then the guides themselves will offer guided services as a value. Generally, that's not really – it's recognized for the people that are competing for the tag, but it's something that the guides are proud of in that relationship between this program and the support of wildlife conservation here in the state. Some of the species are guide required, so that's an important partnership with the hunting guides here. And then just a real brief comment on the emperor goose discussion, which is very interesting. I have the good pleasure or honor to sit through many Board of Game meetings. And in the recent Board of Game meeting, there was quite a discussion on emperor geese management because the population is starting to get to thresholds as outlined by the member, Representative Kronk. And within the allocation structure, a vast majority of the harvest goes to the federal program, which is federally qualified rural residents. And that harvest is in the order of around 7,000 birds per year. The state seasons allow an up to tag of somewhere around, I think it's 150 tags. It's an up to number the department issues depending on the threshold. And then the non-resident tags are issued through a drawing structure, and it's an up to 25 tags. So as you look at the pie, there's a very small percentage of the available harvestable surplus that is used by the state seasons for either state residents in Alaska or non-residents. So when we're, discussing a bird population, it's a little different than moose, where maybe we're talking about a few hundred animals of harvest. The birds, it's like I say, I think it was somewhere around 7,000 birds harvested to the federal program, and then around 100 birds or so harvested to the state program. So we're neutral on the emperor goose portion of the bill, meaning that we would defer to this committee, the legislature, and the department to decide if it's a good idea. But the numbers are interesting on how that harvest goes about. So with that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for your time. APHA is proud of its partnership in this program and look forward to its continuance in hopes that this reform passes.
Thank you, Mr. Stacey, for your public testimony on the bill and your insight on the emperor goose management plan that the state has. As mentioned before, we look forward to some follow-up documentation from the department in regards to the specifics of that management plan. Is there anybody else in the audience that's looking to provide public testimony on Senate Bill 204? Seeing or hearing none, we'll now close public testimony on Senate Bill 204. Any further questions on 204 before we set the bill aside? The plan is to pick it back up again on Monday. And look to any amendments that can be delivered to the office by Sunday at 5 o'clock. Questions, comments, committee members? Seeing or hearing none, Senate Bill 204 is set aside. Next on the agenda, we've got Mr. Grasser. Thank you for providing the knowledge that you did in regards to the implementation of the proposed language in the legislation. Thank you for attending and giving us such a wonderful background on your team's picture. I think we all wish we were sitting in your tent with you on that sandbar. As I was saying, with House Bill 349, we last heard it on Wednesday. We have Representative Rauscher and his staff, Ryan McKee, here. If they'd like to make any opening remarks, you're more than welcome to before we start addressing some of the amendments that we received. Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Chairman Puckett. Appreciate it. I guess we all remember what it was about. It's about well spacing. It's about what can happen if you space it too closely and how we don't do that anymore. And basically there's some antiquated process that we are trying to keep out to make the act of drilling more efficient. And basically that's what the bill is about. So I guess you're all refreshed now. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. And just for members, knowledge, the amendment number one that we're about to address was distributed. You should have it on your desk in front of you with that. Representative Hand.
Thank you. I move amendment number one.
And I'll object for the purposes of discussion, Representative Hannon.
So what amendment number one does is delete the very final, on line 12, page 2, the final clause in that sentence. In the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, we did amend the bill to include an explicit protection of relative rights, and we used suggested draft language from both the AOGCC and LEDS Legal. In that version now, it appears to read that they can not protect correlative rights unless there was a defined pool already established. So if we delete that final clause, it just says the commission needs to protect correlative rights, whether the pool has been defined or not. That correlative rights, which I'll remind you is when you've got different leaseholders adjoining a section line, and once a pool has been defined, it becomes clear, but if you haven't defined it, so I think it's cleaner and makes our intent clear that we should always be protecting the correlative rights, whether we've defined the pool or not.
Thank you, CNR Co-Chair Hannon, for the cleanup language and explanation on the amendment. Is there further discussion on the amendment from representatives? Seeing or hearing none, I'll remove my objection. Is there further objection?
I'll just object to make a statement real quick that I appreciate the amendment. I appreciate the time you put into it, and I do consider it friendly, and I think it will help out at this time, so I'm going to support it. Thank you.
Is your objection?
I remove my objection.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. With no further objection, the amendment passes the body. With that, we'll look to the will of the committee of the piece of legislation, but before that, are there any comments or questions from members before we do that? Seeing or hearing none, I'll just point out that in Representative Fields' absence, he had some questions on the first hearing, and I believe that there was a follow-up provided from the department for some of the specifics on his questions, and I, with his absence, I'll assume that those questions were met and concerns were met. So, final comments, Representative Rauscher.
No, I just I think this is a needed piece of legislation that the that our industry is looking forward to having put in their ability to search for oil and gas going forward in this state, and I think it'll help improve turnaround time permitting, and I hope you all support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. What is the will of the committee, Representative Hopkins?
Mr. Chair, I move HB 349, Work Order 32-LS1542, that's my house address, /B, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection from committee members? Seeing or hearing none, the piece of legislation moves from committee, and I would have said that Rep. Hopkins, with your conflict, even though there is one, you still would have been required to vote. So. I'd just like to point out that Ledge Legal has the ability to make any conforming or technical changes to the bill, and we'll adjourn, but if I can ask members to please stick around to sign the yellow folder. And just for note, on Monday we'll be continuing our work on House Bill 204 that we just heard, and then we'll pick up House Bill 120 and look to a new CS, which pretty much changed the bill almost in its entirety. And staff has sent out a new draft of House Bill 120 to members. And previously, last year, we had set an amendment deadline. And obviously, because of the massive changes to the bill, that amendment deadline is no longer in effect. So look forward to having a good weekend, you all. I know there's some events happening tonight and tomorrow. And hopefully, we can all come back with no black eyes and get to work on Monday. So with that, House Resources adjourned at 1:55 p.m.